All right, guys, let's continue with this analysis with Len Dawson. Len Dawson, do you think it's as simple as the Colts, if they can stop Thomas Jones and Cedric Benson, that they put that game in the hands of a Rex Grossman and basically they've succeeded?
Well, you know exactly what the Bears want to do. They want to get that running game established. They want to pound at him and pound at him and pound at him. And if they can get that going, then they can pick and choose when Grossman will throw the pass, and probably some play-action passes will go along with the running attack. And so for Indianapolis, I would think their goal is they got to find a way to stop that running game. I mean, generally speaking, I think in most games, what you're looking at is stop the running attack and put them one-dimensional and throwing the football. I don't care, you know, what a team is capable of doing. If you can stop that running attack, you make them one-dimensional, and it makes your job a little bit easier. But that's the big question. Can the Bears run the ball and take the heat off Rex Grossman? And on the other side, can the Colts stop that running attack and force Grossman to beat them?
Michael, Cedric Benson was the early runner for the Bears in the game, was somewhat successful. Then suddenly in the second quarter, they switched back to Thomas Jones, who was enormously successful. Tell me what you see in this game.
Well, you know what? You go with what works. And that's been their formula throughout the playoffs, and it's worked. Tom and Jones scored a couple of touchdowns the last few playoff games apiece. And, you know, I think Cedric Benson comes in, adds a little different wrinkle. Feels like he's a bigger guy, but not as quick and more as much of a slasher as Thomas Jones, but just a heavier body kind of wears you down a little bit. And, you know, Lynn made a great point. In every game, you basically want to stop that run. That is your main focus. And I think for Indianapolis, stopping the run, You gotta have to try to make Rex Grossman beat you. Now, the only thing is, they realize that. The Bears realize that. And if you watch the way that the receivers have played, Musa Muhammad and then Berrien, they've really helped Rex Grossman out. They've made some incredible plays on throws that, you know, probably would have been incomplete. So those guys know that you got to come in, you got to play better to really help this quarterback succeed, and they're willing to do whatever it takes to do that. And they've shown that. So for Indianapolis, they've surprised me with their running game with a die. And so, you know, Indianapolis' running game isn't dead either, even without Edgerton James. So it's going to be very interesting to see which team has the running game, because Chicago's known for running, but I have a feeling that Indianapolis is going to do a pretty good job of that themselves with their offense.
And that Chicago defense on the other side of the ball, here's Seth Joyner talking about the importance of that front four.
If they can get pressure, with the front four, I think, you know, they'll be fine in the secondary, because the secondary and our defensive line, you know, work hand in hand. You know, any defensive lineman will tell you that. You know, any defensive lineman worth his beans will tell you that. And any DB worth his beans will tell you that. That when the guys are getting pressure up front, it makes the secondary look good. And when the secondary is covering well in the back, it makes the guys up front look well. So,
that's Seth Joyner, Len Dawson. Now we switch to the other side, and you are Peyton Manning, and you're having to deal with a withering Chicago pass rush.
Well, I'm going to tell you, the first thing you got to do is protect the football, and that's what happened to the Saints. They did not protect the football, and they didn't protect their quarterback, Drew Brees, because I can recall early on when somebody forgot to block one of the defensive linemen, and he had a clean shot at the blind side of Drew Brees, nailed in, the ball went flying over there, and once again, the defensive people, instead of just falling on the ball and recovering it, they tried to pick it up and run with it, and the Saints maintained possession of it. But the thing is with the Indianapolis Colts that they can be two-dimensional because they can run with the football, and I would look for the Colts, you know, because they have so many weapons. You know, Grossman, you know, he had a couple of good throws in that ball game, but fortunately they didn't need him, and Berrien made a phenomenal catch for a touchdown, and you can't expect that to happen all that many times. But this, I think this is going to be, you know, it's a chess match like all these games when they got two good football teams, and it's going to be interesting to see exactly what happens.
Michael, let's switch to the historical importance of this game. We talked with Chris Berman about it. We talked with Howie Long about it. We talked with Seth Joyner about it, that you have both black head coaches in this game, that for the first time a milepost has been reached. How important is that for measuring the progress of African-American athletes, but also leaders in the superstructure of sports?
I think it's important. I think it's shown that African-Americans, not just African-Americans, but many minority has the same ability and the same capability of coaching and being successful as anybody else. Now, does that mean there are going to be more minorities hired? Who knows? But I just think that it does show that you know, no matter what your race is or anything like that, that you can be successful. It's about the man. It's about the leader. And, you know, if it were just one coach, that'd be great. If it, now that it's both, that's phenomenal. But I'm pretty sure that both of these coaches just want to be known as great coaches. They don't want to be known as the African-American coach because, you know, you don't define yourself in that way. I'm pretty sure they don't define themselves in that way as individuals. But I think for everybody else looking from the outside in, it is a great milestone. And I just hope that they can have continued success and that, you know, at least you know one of them is going to win a Super Bowl now. And that's a great thing, too.
Len, you know, we talked a lot about Lamar Hunt's legacy, and I think with Hank Stram, Lamar Hunt's legacy can also be measured by the fact that they brought in so many of the outstanding black athletes into the AFL, which accelerated what was happening in the NFL. Tell us about this new historical development and what it means to you as you look back at the last 40 years.
Well, let's go back what Michael's talking about, the two coaches in this. And it's great to see the two classy individuals, keep people with class, able to win some big ball games, and one of them's going to win the biggest game of all. But, you know, Hank Stram and Lamar Hunt, they were going after the best players. They didn't care what color they were. And the thing is that it turned out that they had some outstanding players, as you well know, with Kansas City there back in the 60s and early 70s. So it's coming to the front that you know, the coaches, what's a good coach, you know, it could be green, and if you're a bad coach, you're a bad coach. But these two guys maintain their composure. Boy, I like to see that with both Lovie Smith and Tony Dungy. And even Tony Dungy would look like, with a lot of us thought, hey, this game is over with, he maintained his composure, and I think that rubbed off onto his players as well, and that's why they were capable of coming back.
Michael, and also when you work through an adversity of the highest proportion like this game, doesn't that make an opportunity for your team to have a quantum leap in confidence going into the Super Bowl?
Well, it just lets your team know that no matter how the Super Bowl starts out, no matter how the game's going, you're never out of it. And, you know, that really was that show, how you're going to react throughout adversity. And those guys showed it no matter what. If this game jumps off, Chicago jumps up on them, like Chicago jumped up yesterday on the Saints, the Colts know, hey, we still got a shot to come back. So it's just going to be they're going to play for 60 minutes. Those guys are going to understand they have an opportunity to win that game no matter what the score and situation is at any point in that game. And I think it definitely does boost your confidence. Now, one thing that I experienced in the Super Bowl and got to be careful of, too, there's a two-week break, you know, and within this
doesn't help.
It doesn't help. A lot of times it doesn't help. If you're a team that's beat up and you made it to the Super Bowl and you're beat up, it may help get some of your key players back on the field. But a lot of times, if you do have someone like a Rex Grossman or somebody who may not be that confident, and all for 2 weeks now he's going to hear about how they really don't think he's that good, sometimes it doesn't help your confidence going into the game. Sometimes players buy into the hype of what they're saying about one side or the other, and it does not help your confidence in that game. So I think whichever team can distance themselves from all the media fanfare, from getting caught up in the process of it, and who can just understand it, keep your head clear of the papers, stay clear of all this extra stuff that's now going to be thrown your way, and focus on what's at hand, that's going to be the team that handles it the best and wins. And I think that's going to be a reflection, too, in a lot of ways of the coaching.
Len, which yes. coach do you think has the edge there in preparing his team to deal with the hype? That's the biggest challenge now.
Well, it is. And I think most players would like to maintain the same routine that they have. They play on Sunday, practice the next week, and play on Sunday again instead of having that additional week, because the additional week is all the hype that goes along with the Super Bowl. And it's hard to avoid it. I mean, it's all around you. Your family is there. All that stuff is going on. And the guys that are able to focus on what they're really there for, you know, has got the best shot at winning. I think, you know, when these two teams look at the two games that were played yesterday, they're going to see the reason why they won. They're going to see that the reason they won was because people did their jobs when they had to do it, and the plays work, because so many times most plays don't work because you give credit to the other team that, you know, either on offense or defense, that they're doing a good job. So the thing is, if you do your job, you can't worry about the guy next to you. He's got to do his, and if he doesn't, you know, that's the way it's going to go, and it's not going to be successful. But I think if you get all these guys on the same page and focusing on why they are there, because there's you always want to win the last game that you play, And hopefully that last game is a significant one, and that's what the Super Bowl is all about.
Final thoughts, guys. Here's Chris Berman from Thursday's show.
Tony Dungy is a great friend, and so, Nick, to be honest with you, until it was Martin Luther King Day and somebody pointed it out to me, I didn't really think of it. But then again, and I don't want to sound old, well, what are you, you know, head in the, you know, I'm a child of the 60s and 70s, and I had to be reminded, I never looked at Warren Moon as a black quarterback. I looked.
Final thoughts, Michael Strahan. How excited are you for this Super Bowl?
I'm pretty excited. You know what? They have some great players. I look at guys who play well over their careers, like a Brian Urlacher, you know, a Gounier. You got guys that I know, Tommy Harris, even though he won't play, but just opportunity to be and help that team to get to where they could be in that situation. But guys who are friends of mine, and Peyton Manning, and guys like that who now have an opportunity to play in this big game. And you have two teams who are going for the first time. I mean, Indianapolis is going for the first time, and you have Chicago the first time in 21 years. So you have a lot of fresh young players who are going to experience something that is an incredible thing. So I just hope that both teams enjoy it. I really could care less who wins, to be honest with you, because I'm not in it. But I'm just excited for those guys that I know to have this opportunity to go out there and play on the biggest stage, and one of them is going to walk away very happy.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much. Len Dawson, you're the best. Michael Strahan, we'll see you next Monday. Let's get our picks in next Monday. But you guys were phenomenal today. We appreciate you joining us.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Leonard. Well, we're going now many thousands of miles down under for our daily update with a guy who, thank God, has gotten up. Luke Jensen, you awake?
Anything for the power of Mr. 8, Mr.
Hey,
Clutch.
Buddy.
Nick Lowry.
I know you were watching those games. Tell me, what was your take on them?
Well, I mean, I thought, obviously, that New Orleans, you got to take care of the football, especially on an away game, and the Bears just took advantage of opportunities. And if you can run the ball and establish the run and really play off of that and don't let Rex Grossman, you know, kind of destroy you, you got it. Look at it. It was fantastic. And then on the other side, just a classic for all time, Peyton Manning coming through when he absolutely needed to. Some dodgy calls at the end, but you know what? You take advantage of opportunities.
Well, let's talk about what happened over the weekend. We talked a lot about Serena Williams. Let's first start with James Blake, who was it looked like was heading towards perhaps a pretty darn good Open. But what happened with his conflict against Fernando Gonzalez?
Well, call Dr. Jacobs, because I think how many times now over the last few years, poor James Blake lets his emotions get the best of him. This guy has as much talent as anyone who's ever played the game. He's fast. He's got amazing weapon with the forehand side. He's gotten better and better each single year. He's gotten through tragedy with his off-court problems. He's actually ran into a net post a few years ago, nearly cracked broke his neck, was nearly paralyzed from the neck down, but he was able to come back and then got a virus. But then he gets these points in his matches where the other guy's winning the big points, and that happens. But you have to regroup. You have to adjust. You have to make changes in your tactics to overcome that situation. By the time the third set rolled around, he was hangdogging it. You've got to stay positive. You've got to get fired up. And he wasn't there.
When we come back, we're going to talk about Serena Williams and more, the Australian Open with IBM Advantage, Luke Jensen. We'll be right back on Head Games on Sports Byline Network and Sirius Channel 122.